This is Relationship, a podcast presenting a gay look at traditional relationships and values with your hosts, the Cotellis. I am Marco.
And I'm Tony.
It's yet again another beautiful Wednesday.
Happy hump day.
How goes it?
I am excited and sad.
Why are you sad?
I'm sad because you're leaving again.
I am.
Yes. For like more than a week.
Yeah, it's like 11 days. But California, I will be in you.
Phrasing.
I did it on purpose.
As one does.
For sure. Yeah, it'll be, I'm going to be gone for like 11 days.
I know. I'll have a fun place to myself moment with the kids on the first night, and then I'll probably be sad the entire rest of the time.
Yes, you will be calling me incessantly and checking in all
texting
the
you a yeah. bunch, demanding pictures. Yeah, the whole bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't do well when you're gone.
No, you do not.
my freak side comes out.
yes, it, even more than normal.
Yes,
that's crazy.
Yes, I just miss you a bunch.
I know, I'll miss you too.
I know,
but I'll be back. I'm always back.
You are always back.
It's always a thing.
So. And then the excited part is because I'm doing a very interesting cross-regional thing with work. So that's fun.
Yeah. I thought you were talking about my new cell phone.
I was not. I would not.
Oh, you should have. This message is brought to you by the new iPhone XS Max. It's so good, y'all. Everyone should be excited about it.
We've had it for a little while now, and you got it the day it came out, as you do.
As I always do. Mm-hmm. But can I have a quick gripe real quick with like Apple? I feel like they need to get their shit together. Because this is the third phone that I've gotten on the day of launch, and I'm like having activation problems because of it. I had activation problems because I got the phone. Everything was all fantastic. I was able to, you know, like now they don't even want you to be able to like interact with a human being at Sprint, right? Like they don't want you to do it. They're like, you can activate your phone yourself, like in front of a computer. Like it's all good. So I thought that was fantastic. I was like super happy about that. Then I go to activate my phone. They give you the code. They tell you everything to do. Like it's all good. And then my phone tells me, your phone is not activated, sir. Like you thought that you were really good. So then I try to call Sprint. I try to call Apple. All of them tell me that
it's
the other person's issue and that they're
always
doing.
Do.
Yeah. And so it was like the craziest thing in the world. And so I ended up having to go on Twitter and blast Sprint. On Twitter, they DM'd me. Yes, you guys, this always works. If ever you have problems, go on Twitter and bitch. It like always works. The squeaky wheel gets the most oil. So it's always good.
They'll heal the quickest.
Yeah, right. And then they DM'd me and came up with the solution. And then my phone ended up working. So it was wonderful. I was happy about it after that. But it just took so long for it to happen. But I say all that to say that I love my phone.
So I think we have a new hashtag for this week's episode, which is first world problems. It took so long. By so long, do you mean a month? No, you mean a couple hours.
Like a whole afternoon.
Oh my goodness.
It was a really long time. And I'm trying to do it with work. And the only reason why I actually cared about it is because your bitch ass is trying to text message me and talk to me throughout the day. And if I don't have cell phone service and I don't answer you, then you go into a panic. And then I have to make sure that you're all taken care of. So
that is not why you did it. And you know it, because I can
you.
Still reach you because I can text you via a million other Apple avenues and you'll get it on
Apple.
Your computer,
Apple
on Avenue. your watch. Yeah.
How about we hop into our hashtag gay relationship?
Yeah, how about
goals?
We do that? Yeah, let's do that, Marco.
As a reminder, every week, Tony and I will pick a wonderful queer couple and highlight them as our hashtag gay relationship goals. Our hope is to bring these relationships to the forefront and give a sense of positivity and perspective to the gay relationship narrative. If you and your partner are interested in becoming our hashtag gay relationship goals, or if there is a queer relationship that you admire and would like to bring to our attention, please reach out to us. Tag us on some of these adorable couples' photos on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. Our handle is @podrelationship. Tony and I will take a look at your photos and posts and could potentially highlight you and your partner on an episode of the podcast. This week, we are focusing on a really great couple that I actually, in true Instagram nature, had been following one of the guys. His name is Justin. And you can follow him on Instagram because he is at JustJustinNYC. He is wonderful. I've been following him for such a long time because he is actually an influencer and a fashion guru. He says that he loves fashion but hates wearing clothing. So if you look at his page, his Instagram page, he's like literally like there's like very few photos where he's not in like
next to nothing.
Yeah, bikini swimwear and things like that. Winter's coming up. I don't know how he's gonna survive because it's gonna be really weird. But yeah, no, he's just like an Instagram model and he does like really, really great photography and things like that by way of his page and everything like that. I'm just like really, really into him. And I've been following him as somebody that really, really admires like menswear and bloggers and things like that. I've been really into all of the things that he does. And sometimes he and I end up having the same clothes, which just makes me feel so happy. But I started doing even more digging and found out that he and his boyfriend actually have a joint account and it's Just Shameless. So that's JustShameless. And that is because his boyfriend's name is Shay. And Shay Carroll, he is also a public figure and Instagrammer and menswear enthusiast and all of this great stuff. But I really like this couple for a few reasons because I just love, they're so cute together.
They are super cute together. And just, did you say Shameless? It's two S's. I think you only said one.
Oh, did I?
Yeah, I think
that's,
you did.
I'm sorry. That's Shameless, L-E-S-S.
Right. Yeah, they're super cute and they do literally everything together. And it looks like they're having all sorts of fun outdoors on the water, in a ton of different cities, lots of hotels. Their food always looks so good. Like they just look like they're enjoying each other and they take some super adorable cute little pictures.
Near naked photos.
It's well, so the near naked, yeah, that happens.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I love the most about them is Justin, for example, like his Instagram page is kind of very serious. Like if you ever like take a look at his page, he's very like fashion model, smoldering, like giving you blue steel, like looking great and all of his clothing, right? But then the pictures of them on their joint profile are super loving. Mm-hmm. Like he's smiling and they're kissing and they're holding on to one another and like he looks happy. And even when they're like posing together and they're trying to give serious looks, they're like touching each other or holding hands or like hanging on one another or like not, there's like no space between them. And it's like super fantastic. I think that that's what kind of made me the most excited to see this because again, I know Justin from his Instagram page and again, how much of like a serious, like men's fashion blogger he is. Like he's the guy that like is giving you looks and that's l-e-w-k and he's like, you know, like he's like very put together and he looks like really, really good. Like so he's just like serving, right? And but then when you see this picture, there's like this softness to him that you can tell that Shay brings out of him, and I really, really like that. And I just thought that was adorable.
And of all the pictures, there are several that are clearly done by like a professional photographer. And sure, they are really excellent pictures.
Incredible. They're my favorite. And I think that they will be your favorite as well. So you guys all have to follow them on Instagram. You can follow their joint account. They are at JustShameless. That's Just Shameless. And if you want to follow them individually, Justin's is at JustJustinNYC. That's Just Justin NYC. And then you can follow Shay, who is at @SHAECARROLL. That's at Shay Carroll. I think you guys are going to like them. And again, if nothing else, you will love the fashion that comes from both of them because they are both stunning and make clothes look amazing. They're just perfect. But then if you follow their joint account, you're going to fall in love with like two really cute guys that are just really into each other. And that's just always wonderful to see.
It is.
So let's take a short break. When we get back, we are going to try to solve the world's problems, Critelli style.
Hi, listeners. This is Tony, and I'm here to shamelessly request a favor of each and every one of you. Please take a moment to rate and review our show. It may seem like a small thing, but the way technology is driven these days makes indicators like this one vital. Your rating, your words, they are another form of assistance for this podcast and your community. And I get a kick out of reading them. It means the world to me that so many of you are out there listening, are emailing us to say that you're feeling better, and are enjoying what my husband and I do. I cannot thank you enough for your continued investment into this growing dialogue about healthy gay lives. Thank you, sincerely. And now, back to the show. And we are back. So continuing with our theme of outside influences, this week, Marco and I are going to be talking about work, your life at work, whether you are, I hate to use the word, but I will because we all know what it means, whether you're out at work or not. So tell me, for you, husband, when did you first start coming out at work?
It was actually, I mean, I remember when you and I were dating and I was working at that clothing store, every one of my employees already knew about you.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have to worry about it. It was pretty immediate. I've been fortunate in my profession because what I do generally actually has quite a few homosexuals in it. Because I, you know, before I was working in, I was like managing retail stores and things like that, which has a very big gay community within itself and things like that. So that wasn't ever, it wasn't challenging for me to, be open about my sexuality and having, you know, a partner or a boyfriend at the time and things like that. That was easy. Mm. That actually came supernatural for me. But I remember it wasn't that simple for you.
No. For me, I mean, I always have to gauge it on a case-by-case basis. So, you know, I grew up in the South for a good period of time, and almost nowhere there was I ever out. And I think the only people I was out to were people that I was dating. As a supervisor, I had never been completely out. There were some people who knew about my personal life. And that's a combination of things. Like, I believe that work and home should be separate. I think that that's healthy. At the same time, the people that I was out with were very, you know, open-minded, progressive, normal, whatever you want to call them. And the reason I wasn't across the board is because there were a lot of people that I supervised that I felt like they would be undermining me in certain ways, and that it would be causing tension and conflict just based on comments that they had made. And I really didn't want to, like, you have to maintain a good balance when you're the supervisor. And now where I'm living, I wouldn't care at all. I'm out at work. Everybody knows, everybody can know. You've come by and met people. And that's totally fine. But living in the South, there were times when, you know, different other supervisors and my own supervisor, like, I didn't think that they would support if this had become an issue. And I just didn't want to have to deal with that. And I think that's a fairly common experience for people, whether that's supervisor or not. You know, being out at work is, it can be a big deal for a lot of people. I mean, there's a reason you don't out other people, right? That's part of our culture. You're not supposed to out other folks to anyone. And I think that speaks volumes to where we're at with just as a society, with our own self-esteem around things, with our own lack of understanding of our power and our rights. And I think that it, you know, I think that it's probably also the one of the sources of the things we need to change in order to continue to move forward to be, you know, fully realized people as a community.
Yeah, I 100% agree. It's always been interesting to me, too, because like when we were living down south and that was going on, your supervisor, your boss, was a lesbian.
At that job, everyone was gay except one person, so the heterosexual was actually the odd minority. Woman out.
Yeah, that's crazy. But it was like so funny because like we never got like the opportunity to do a lot of like fraternizing by way of like we've never really been able to do like the company party where mm-hmm. like you get to bring your spouse or whatever like that to those events and things like that. And it's so funny because that's never. Do you feel like that's ever been a tension in our relationship? Like the inability to like be involved in each other's work has ever been. You've been involved in my work, all my employees, like everybody that I work with, my team, everyone knows who you are. But I don't necessarily always get the opportunity to be close and or connected to anybody that you work with. But that's usually by the nature of what it is that you do.
Well, sometimes, yeah. Sometimes it's because, you know, you have to protect people's health and privacy. So sometimes it's that. Yeah, I think you've only come to my job twice. Once in Florida and once here.
Yeah.
And I think that's it. And not that I've had, you know, a ton of jobs, but, yeah. And in fact, in that time period, I've had 3 jobs. So, 2 for the same company, but anyway, yeah. Yeah. So no, it hasn't been an issue or a point of contention for me, but it's definitely something that now, like being a little bit older, being married, you know, as little of a crap as I used to give, giving even less of a crap now, you know, that has a lot to do with it, I think, as well, because the perception of the threat is there. It's an unfortunate part about being gay is for so many of us, we've been taught that it's this thing we have to constantly keep our eyes on. Like, you know, you can't be too gay and you can't be too out and you have to worry about what other people would think and you'd have to worry about the impact that it has and you have to worry about your safety. And, you know, so many of us now, like when I look around and I see younger gay people, I don't see them having that. And I don't know if that's just my like smaller exposure to younger gay people or if that's actually becoming a trend. But I see them just full of pride and that it's not a big deal. And I really hope that that continues to be a thing, because that's why I don't like saying being out at work. Like, I don't like that whole concept of being out or in the closet. Like, I just don't like that. There's all these studies about how like being gay is like the hidden minority. Like, it's the only minority that can hide itself. And there's all this psychological damage that comes from that. There's tons of psychological damage from being any minority, but there's tons that comes from that. And I just, you know, I know I've experienced some of it, and I wouldn't wish it on anybody. I'm happy to say that where I'm at now, that's not the case, and it's not a big deal. And people ask about you. Several people have our wedding, the magnets that we had at our wedding, several people have those up on their offices, ooh, up on the file cabinets in their offices, which I think is great. So that's really wonderful. But I also know that, like, where I'm at now, like, you're not my boyfriend anymore. You're my husband. So I think that has a lot to do with it too. Like, I'm not going to not be out at work anymore, no matter what kind of job I get. And it's nice because I happen to work in a place where a lot of people in positions of authority are gay. So that's really great.
Yeah. I mean, the gays are running the world at this point, right?
Them and Beyonce.
For sure. No, so, I mean, we're really fortunate with that. Like, we don't really necessarily have to worry about that. The work aspect has never really been a problem in our relationship. Like, we've always been fairly grounded in how work relates to our relationship. That's not a problem. The only time we've ever actually had some issues is bringing work into our relationship by way of, like...
What do you mean?
Not being able to... turn off work in our, like, when we get home.
You keep saying we. Do I do that?
You can. It's not consistent with you. You're fortunate enough to be able to have, like, a turn off with your work. I don't necessarily have that luxury with mine.
Well, you say that.
I don't.
But
you just don't believe it.
But I will say that you've felt that way about every job you've ever had.
I do, because in every job that I've ever had, I've been the person in charge. And so if I was the retail manager of a clothing store, but I got off at 6 o'clock, there's still, you know, 3 to 4 hours in which the store that I'm in charge of is still open.
Well, sure, when you're on call, that's one thing.
So if people have questions or they need things because I am the person in charge, they're of course going to reach out to me. When I was a district manager of a multiple stores, I was on call all the time. You know, at one point in time, there was like 11 different stores that were reaching out to me that needed things from various time zones and things like that too. So those things always happen. Even with my current position, I'm working with multiple time zones. I'm dealing with a lot of time sensitive things. I'm dealing with people who are very needy and need things all the time. So I don't always, like, if I get off of work at 6 o'clock, that doesn't mean that my West Coast stores know that they have to, you know, get everything in by 6 o'clock, because it's 3 o'clock their time and they still have a whole other 3 hours to worry about things. So sometimes I can pick between like super important and whether or not it can be taken care of tomorrow. But sometimes there's phone calls that I have to answer, or there's emails that I have to at least give a quick response to let them know that I'm not in the office right now, but we'll take care of this tomorrow, because, you know, there's things that are urgent for them. And then there's the other aspects of my job too, which, you know, I manage social media for my work and I do a lot of that stuff too. So if I'm getting DMs or if I have to make posts or there's an Instagram story that has to go up and I have this scheduled and these things need to go and happen right now, you know, we're in the middle of a giveaway or we have these things going on, sometimes I have to get home and then tend to that stuff for a little bit of time to like make it happen. Because it's part of my job. It's part of what I have to do. So you don't necessarily love that. I think you're getting better at it, but you don't understand it. And that's mainly because you don't have those responsibilities. Like, that's not something that you have to worry about.
Well, when I've had those responsibilities, I understood it. Like, when I was in charge of residential programming and that was 24 hours, like, I got that. Like, I understood that, like, the latest staff get off at this time, then the other manager takes over at this time. That's that. There was a rotating schedule when I was working at the Children's Crisis Center, and that's fine when you're actually like on call and expected to be on call, or when an emergency happens, of course, like if some unexpected thing and all the heads have to come together, like that's totally fine. I'm talking about like the day-to-day, the ability to like say this can wait till tomorrow, and when you don't do that, yes, that does create tension for us.
Yeah, I mean, and again, I think that I've, for the most part, done a pretty decent job. Again, if you're going to send me an order and it's 7 o'clock, I know that I can't, it's not necessary for me to put it in the system because our warehouse is closed and there's no way they're going to pack it anyways, right? However, there are some times where it is important because the order needs to go out tomorrow and I need to make sure to put it in the system right now so that the warehouse sees it first thing in the morning so that they pack it and that they take care of it. Like, there's things like that that will happen and can happen and have happened that I need to, like, tend to. So it's not necessarily that I'm on call, but I do have kind of a responsibility to making sure that I at least address these situations and find out whether or not it's, like, imperative to take care of it right now or whether I can hold off until tomorrow to actually worry about it. And a lot of the time, often it's, you know, I can deal with this tomorrow, but some of the time it's like, you know, can you send me the tracking number to my shipment? Like, it's supposed to have gotten here today and we have no idea where it is. Like, I kind of need to be able to take care of that for them because it's a 911, you know, like that needs to be taken care of right now because we need to figure out where it is or why it hasn't gotten to them yet. Sometimes it's as simple as it's out for delivery. It should get to you soon, but sometimes it's, you know, holy shit, we didn't get that stuff out in time and it's not going to get there till tomorrow. Like, are you okay till tomorrow kind of thing? So there's just different things. And again, I think it's my responsibility to figure out whether or not I can worry about it tomorrow, or if I need to deal with it right away. But I think as a partner that has that as a weight on them, that the only thing that I can ever ask of you as a partner that has to be married to the partner that has to worry about that is like the patience and the understanding and the trust that I would rather spend my time with you than having to worry about this stuff. But every once in a while I have to tend to this really quickly to make sure that things are handled, because I'm getting paid to make sure that these things are handled. And if I'm not doing that, then I'm not doing part of my job. So those things become very, very challenging. But how do you handle it? How do you handle it as a partner? How do you not let work affect your relationship?
Oh, it doesn't bother me anymore when you do it. I've just come to realize that this is your value. It's a part of what makes you a good worker. You know, I like that you're a good hard worker. It's one of the things I find attractive about you. So I've just sort of said, you know, these things are going to happen. He's going to do them. It doesn't really matter whether I think they're justified or not. What matters is that they're important to you. And my opinion in those situations, quite frankly, doesn't really matter. So when you have to go off and do that, there's plenty of other things I can do. And I will do them. It's annoying sometimes. Especially when there's a lot of, like, especially when it's not efficient, like when there's a lot of like running around with it and sort of talking about other things and ooh, real quick while I have you on the phone. And it's like, no, prioritize, you know, what you need to talk about now. But again, that's my value. It doesn't have to be anybody else's. So that's how I mean, at first it definitely was like, what are you doing? Like, you never switch off. And it was more about you not switching off and what that was doing to you. Like, and so because you've started to learn how to relax a little more, that's why I feel a little bit better about it. It was never really about the, oh my gosh, we have to hit the pause button on whatever we're watching, or, you know, you had to step away from and take a call at dinner or something like that. Like, it was never really about that. It's about you have a time when you're working and you have a time when you're not. And the time that you're not working, you need to be taking care of yourself.
Yeah, I have always appreciated your desire to want to be a part of that and check that out for me. I think that you and I see things a teeny bit differently, because like when you think that I need to quote unquote relax and things like that, like I could very well be relaxed. Sometimes work does make me relax sometimes, because, you know, of the things that I do with work and how they're not very stressful or time consuming and things like that. Sometimes I am relaxed with doing work, and sometimes getting this task accomplished will make me feel even more relaxed because I know that I don't have to worry about it. I don't decompress the same way that you do. You like to work, you get off at 5 o'clock, you come home, you take the dog out, you sit on the couch and you play your video games and like you kind of hang out and decompress that way. I don't necessarily need that. That's not like a thing for me. I don't do that because I, in a bigger picture, see a lot of things. I see other things, you know, we have this podcast and all of the things that come from this podcast. So I have to think about the social media aspect and answering DMs and figuring out other interviews that we need to set up and all of this other stuff like that. So I have that going on. Then I have to think about what's going on for my next day and what meetings do I have and what emails do I need to check and how I can prep all that stuff like that. So there's not really a time for me to log off, if you will, except for like Friday at 6 o'clock when I know that I have 2 days where I don't really have to worry about any of that stuff. Again, getting tasks accomplished that's more my way to relax. Like that is what makes me feel good, because then I know I don't have a list of stuff that is constantly running through my head. Like I don't have to go through and sort through all that stuff. And that makes me feel so much better. But it's just a little bit differently. But as a partner and as the man that I married, you know, you're my husband and we are supposed to be spending time together with one another. I do try to value the time that we spend together. That's why I always want to be active in some kind of way, like creating memories and getting ourselves out and doing things that feels a little bit better and gives us the opportunity to experience and have time with one another. I do try to do that because I don't measure time spent in sitting on the couch and watching TV, because that's like a vegetative state where we're like not really interacting with one another. But you know, are we taking a walk? Are we talking to one another? Are we going to a food bazaar that's down the street? Are we going to play video games and laughing and having a good time with each other? Like, what are we doing to like interact with one another and do those things? I try to like make sure that those are very definitive on my end so that we feel like both of those cups are being filled. That's really important to me.
Yeah. I don't know. I hear that and I hear tasks still. And I think for me, that's where there's like some opposites for you and I is, I mean, and this is something I've said, you always are like going on to the next step. You're always driven to find the next thing. So I even as you were saying that stuff, I found it interesting to say like, you know, the only time I have to take time off is, you know, Friday at 6:00. And then you have built things to take up that time too. So I do think, you know, it goes back to what I've always felt, which is, you know, I think that being able to unplug, to unwind, to relax is something you don't give yourself enough. I know that's why I enjoy going on vacation with you, because I actually see you like unwind and relax, which is great. But I don't know. I guess it's just different for everybody.
Yeah. I mean, because to be honest with you, I don't try to pack our weekends. You're the one that plans our weekends and ends up having stuff for us to do and partake in, because you don't want to do anything during the week. So you make everything happen on the weekend. Whereas I try to get everything taken care of during the week. So then the weekend is left to do nothing and like rest and relax and recuperate. So I don't plan our weekends. You're the one that packs our weekends and has stuff planned for us for Friday night, Saturday, and then Sunday as well. Like, what are we doing on these days? And then I'm like, oh okay, I guess we're going to be busy the entire weekend as well, which is fine, because I want to participate and have fun with those things, but that's not what I want to do. Like, I would rather have a really concentrated and dense, like, go, go, go week. So then that way the weekend is left to rest and sit on the couch and like look at TV and watch movies together and go take walks together and things like that. Like, stuff that's like very simple and just specific to us. Because, you know, Monday through Friday, I'm so turned on the entire time. Like, I'm on the entire time. And I have to do things all the way until the time we have to go to bed. So it would be really nice to have, like, the weekends to be able to say, nope, not going to deal with it because this is my time with you. But I don't schedule stuff for the weekends. That they usually come from you. So those are things that are a little different for me, but it's true. You just have to find ways to make sure that like work within itself does not take over the relationship, because that is definitely an outside influence that can get really, really tough. Right.
Well, and to get back to the original topic, you know, you have to decide for yourself too, what your level of comfortability is with being out at work. And if you want to be completely, I won't say authentic, because there's a reason that people have to consider and weigh whether they want to be out at work or not. And I don't think it's fair to say you're being inauthentic if you are aware of those pressures and that those issues. But I think you should, you know, make some decisions for yourself. I hope that you work at a place where you can be just completely you and not have to worry about anything, because that's the kind of work environment we all should be in, regardless of what we do for work. And that has nothing to do with the type of work that you're in. That has everything to do with the tone that your leadership sets. And that can be open and supportive no matter what you're doing, whether it's, you know, logistics or fast food. Like it just doesn't matter. There are things you can do to create that culture. So I hope that people can work in those kind of places. I hope that they can have that experience. But I think that we have seen from both of our stories that there is sort of a full range of the ability to do that.
Yeah, I mean, especially since not every job allows, and it's so weird that we still live in a time in which that has to be a thing, but some jobs you can't necessarily be out and open and do those because your position, I guess, is affected by that, whatever that means. But I think it's just true to being authentic. It's important to be authentic to your relationship so that you and your partner know what's happening. So then the position, like you are able to properly separate work from your personal life. So then that way, if there is a tense scenario in which you can't be out and open at work, that at least everything at home is going really, really well. So then that way each person is properly getting fed what needs to be given to them so that, you know, they're able to sustain and not have to worry about that as a big deal. And then if you do end up having to bring those elements of work into your home, that it's like managed and understood by both parties. Because those things, it's very, very important because it can become a really, really challenging thing. Work can be really, really hard on a relationship. Especially if you don't like your job or if you're, again, you have to bring work home all the time or say you're gone all the time because of work or anything like that. Or, you know, say you're super duper famous and your job is, you know, to look amazing and or, you know, show your scantily clad body all the time and you have a ton of people that are idolizing you on a consistent basis and reaching out to you and trying to talk to you all the time. Like those things become a little bit of pressures within the home, right? So you have to make sure that you have all of that properly managed.
Yeah,
absolutely. So, well, let's say we take a short break. And when we come back, we've got a very fun interview.
I think that sounds like a great idea.
Hiya, listeners.
We are excited to share with our fellow New Yorkers that we have a group on meetup.com.
Yep, that's right. Every month, this group meets to discuss relationship topics, like-minded singles, couples, and people in all other forms of relationships from around the greater New York City and surrounding areas come together to build a community.
If you're interested in joining us, go to meetup.com and search relationship. That's shit with an exclamation point, not an I. Meeting dates and various social activities will be posted on the page.
This group will give you an opportunity to be a part of a larger dialogue focusing on important relationship topics, and it'll help you connect and have fun with others within our community.
So go to meetup.com and search relationship. We look forward to seeing you at our next meeting.
We're going to get back to the show. We'll see you all later.
Bye. And we are back.
You literally sound like a game show host every single time. I swear that introduction.
Come on down. Da da da.
Oh my
da, da, God. Da da.
Save us
so,
all.
So continuing with our work outside influence, this week our guest is the incomparable Amy Toppin,
Amy.
HR guru to the stars.
Definitely to the stars. Yes. All the stars.
All the stars. Every star. Right. So,
welcome.
Amy. Yes, thank welcome.
You.
Yes.
Thank you.
So, Amy is actually a really good friend of ours.
Mm-hmm.
We randomly met Amy and another good friend of ours, Stacy, out one random night here in the streets of New York City.
That's right.
While we were in our PJs getting chicken wings.
And we've been friends ever since.
Shall have. What are we at?
A good five years?
Oh, yeah.
We just celebrated our five-year friendiversary.
This month.
Yeah. Googly moogly. So we're so excited. Because we were talking about work and outside influences on relationships and things like that, we were talking about that whole thing, and we thought it would be great to bring an expert in to talk.
I will try my hardest to be an expert.
The expert.
I was going to say, we're still waiting for her to show up.
I know, right? So, Amy, tell our listeners a little bit about like your background and what it is that you do and all of that fun stuff.
Yeah, I will happily do so. I have been in the realm of HR for far longer than I want to think about. Close to 15 years. I know. My first job out of college, it was something I always wanted to do, and I've been in the field ever since. What drew me to it is just the human component. Mm-hmm. I enjoy the interaction with people. I enjoy balancing the needs of a business and a company with the needs of every single person that makes up that entity. And so, I don't see myself in any other line of work outside of being in HR people space. I am currently with a startup in Brooklyn called Pilotworks, which is shared kitchen space. The premise being that we are creating access for people that want to start and grow their own food and beverage business. So we're just getting things off the ground there, building a team, building a culture, and doing a lot of really great work. So I'm excited to be part of that team, and excited to be here with you two today.
Awesome. We're happy to have you. So just to give some perspective, so roughly what is the range of the number of employees that you have been in HR I guess overseeing?
Yeah, supporting.
Sure, supporting. Yeah.
It has been anywhere from probably 2,000, 2,500. Before Pilotworks, I was with SoulCycle. And there we had 2,500 employees in the U.S. and in Canada. Prior to that, I was with a manufacturing firm that had about 1,500 employees. So, and now at Pilotworks, we're a tiny little startup. So we have about 80 employees.
That sounds so tiny.
So tiny.
So just to give our listeners a little bit of sort of grounding information. So not only the U.S. For your information, but Canada. And then also for people who don't know, California, I hear, is like a beast
California, a dragon. Yeah, it's really a West Coast corridor. So, you know, operations anywhere from Washington through Oregon, California, they're pretty challenging. And not only is it the state entities, but also the local jurisdiction. So in addition to California being a monster of its own, San Francisco is one of the trickiest places for an entity to operate as related to its people practices.
I remember when I was working for another company back in my past, we would always have manager meetings like twice a year. And at every manager meetings, the California stores would always have to have their own separate meeting because there would be like this whole new like
different rules,
compliance talk and what has to happen and things like that that just didn't relate to any other state or anything like that. Yeah. And California was its own thing. And I always, of course, I had friends that were a part of the California crew. So I'd be like, tell me what happened in there. Like, I want to know stuff. But and I got to work a little bit in California. So I got to understand a little bit of what's going on. But there are just some, it's not even that they're wacky. They're actually great rules. It's just no other place operates like that.
It's so a fantastic pro-employee state. It's when I say a monster, I don't mean in a negative connotation. They're doing really great things. In actually, New York is following up pretty quickly behind them. So if you think about minimum wage requirements, even some of the things that New York is passing around, harassment training that is now required for every employee in an organization, New York is coming up pretty quickly in trying to match what California is doing.
But I love it.
It's definitely pro-employee.
I loved it. One of the things that I liked the most is when reviewing employees, you have to review them on the same offense three times before you can possibly, and I could be wrong, and this may be super dated, just so you guys know, but it has to be the same offense three different times. And if you do end up terminating them, you have to have their check with the day's pay on it, hand it to them before you can terminate them from their position. Yeah. So like any days that they worked during that pay period and the day that they are working that day and the hours that they're supposed to work for that full day, you have to like, you're fired, here's your paycheck. And then that's how you can get rid of them.
The latter part of that is definitely true. The final pay requirements are incredibly stringent in California. Mm-hmm. So much so that, for example, at SoulCycle, we didn't have a check processing capability in California. So we would advise people of a suspension and then advise them of the termination at, you know, maybe 2 days later. That would give us the period of time for us to send the check. Wow. On the violation piece, that actually is in-house. So it depends on what the company policy is.
Okay.
And California is really strict on if you're going to enforce something that you have to have documentation. You have to have it in that policies have to be followed if you've established certain policies. So if a company's policy says that 3 violations are required before termination, that's certainly the case.
Gotcha. Because I found it very interesting that like if a person was late, say like if they were late twice and you reviewed them on being late, but then they didn't give back the right amount of change, for example, like that is a whole different, like you couldn't terminate them because of the 2 lates and the 1 wrong change thing. The wrong change is now like a whole new.
Could be. Depends on company policy. Every state. So the main difference between countries right now, so talking about Canada versus the US, is what is at will and what's not. So in Canada, there's not this theory of at will. In the United States, including California, there's still a theory of at will, which means an employer can end employment and an employee can end employment at any time, so long as the basis is not discriminatory. So long as you're not making that decision. So in that circumstance, unless company policy prohibited it, you could still terminate that person based on state law.
Okay. See, this is so fascinating.
Yeah, and there are a lot of misconceptions. There's a lot of confusion. There's a reason that it is an industry unto itself.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that we brought Amy on here is we wanted to talk about your rights in your workplace, especially when we're talking about like coming out or you know, anything about like disclosing things to your employees. So we want to kind of dive into that. And Amy, I understand you have a bit that you could say about federal regulation, mm-hmm. as far as like minimum standards, discrimination, that sort of stuff. So can you educate our listeners on what their rights are?
Absolutely. And you mentioned federal, which mm-hmm. is always moving at a very slow pace.
Yes.
And so a number of different regulations, laws, acts have come out over the last 30 or so years. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until most recently that an appeals court in 2017, I believe, that found that gays were protected under the same protections that, say, anyone who had a varying ethnic background. So these protected characteristics that we think about, gender, ethnicity, religion, it has taken us a number of years to get to the point that we're also saying your sexual orientation is part of that and your gender identity, meaning just last year in 2017 on the federal side.
And I think it's important to note that from a housing perspective, from an Americans with Disabilities Act perspective, you've been a protected class for a very long time, my mm-hmm. friends. But from an employment perspective, it really was last year, last couple of years, depending on where you're living, that you actually gained a sort of blanket right.
Yeah. And I think where there's a real opportunity is the in-house perspective. So the federal regulations, the state, the local laws that are being passed are fantastic. But I think it's the accountability on a company's part to really outwardly state that they consider sexual orientation, gender identity, these added characteristics class. Are protected classes right. in the same way as, for me, being a woman is a protected class.
Or age.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or ability.
Yeah, and we're seeing more and more of that. I saw a study recently it's about 80% of companies, between 80 and 90% of companies actually include sexual orientation and gender identity now in their policies, stating that, you know, the anti-harassment and prohibiting discrimination against those groups.
So there are certain industries, like, for example, I worked in, you know, retail, clothing retail, fashion industries and things like that, where it's just assumed you're going to get your fair share of gays, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they kind of run the industry, right? Of course. So it's like a thing. But so, I mean, just from like a specific question, you're sitting in an interview and say you, you know, have a, I don't know, a finance degree, and you're looking to, you know, get into being a broker and things like that, and you're sitting in an interview and things like that. What questions are not allowed to be asked regarding your sexual orientation and things like that?
In my, and I guess this is probably, this is my personal perspective, my professional perspective, is in an interview, there should never be a reason to ask a question that forces someone to identify in any way. Going back to some of the other protected classification, like the religion, the ethnic background of who you love, that it just shouldn't come up. For me, a job interview should be really rooted in the competencies of a job. So if I am hiring in a finance role, I should have a very specific list of either the behavioral competencies that I'm looking for or the experience competencies that I'm looking for. I want someone who has been in financial planning and analysis for 3 years. I want someone who can demonstrate that they can manage a P&L. Those sorts of very concrete things, that anything else doesn't matter. It's rooted in what is going to make that candidate most successful in the role, despite any other outside influences. It shouldn't come up. There is no reason it should come up. And to answer your question, if it does come up, I would hope, and it depends on how comfortable anyone is, because I can only imagine that it's a really uncomfortable situation to be asked those sorts of questions, sure, especially when it doesn't tie to the role you're interviewing for. You know, I would hope that people would be able to say, you know, that doesn't really speak to my experience. And I think that's a great way to answer it, of taking it back to the experience that I bring to the table related to this role has nothing to do with that question.
So do you think that homosexual people, gay, lesbian people and things like that should jump on the grenade and address it in an interview? Do you think that, because to your point, it doesn't matter, but, you know, we as queer people in society feel like it kind of does have to be identified, right? Because there's this constant fear of feeling like you may not want to be friends with me if you find out that I'm gay, yeah, or I may not get the job if you later find out that I'm gay, or things like that. Like, I could get fired. So we have these fears. Is it something that we should make known in the middle of the interview, or how does that work out?
For me, it's about being your authentic self. I, as a heterosexual woman, it's kind of difficult for, I can sympathize, but I can't empathize.
Sure.
But it depends on what you need to be your authentic self. And if that is saying or answering a question in a way that you feel incredibly comfortable, whether that is identifying or not, I say, be you, do you. You know, sadly, if that's going to impact the outcome, I feel nothing but disappointment for that organization if they're, sure, making a decision based on that.
Because gays are amazing and everyone should have them in their organization, right?
I mean, that's the other thing, is going back to what companies are really focused on these days. Diversity is one thing. But I think it's the inclusive nature of building a team that allows for people of many different backgrounds, of many different perspectives, of many different experiences. And there's a huge amount of scientific data that now proves that it is good for business. It's good for business to have people of all different thoughts and backgrounds and experiences coming together to solve problems. Knowing that we're all working in organizations that are helping a client, that are helping a base of people,
right?
And that base of people is probably of a diverse background as well. And so why not have more thoughts and ideas on your team and build it in that way?
How do you feel? I'm sorry, I'm asking these questions because, you know, how, as a black man, right? Like, and we'll just start there. As a black man, to know that companies have to make a conscious effort to be diverse is kind of it's kind of like a backhanded compliment, right?
Consolation prize.
Yeah, it's kind of like one of those like weird things where it's like, oh, because you weren't gonna hire me until you guys had a meeting and decided that diversity was the game for plan for 2019. So let's get more colored people in the room so that we feel good about it. Like, and that's the cynic in me. So please forgive me because that sounds terrible. But how do you, as a cisgendered, heterosexual, white woman, feel when you hear stuff like that? Like, and you're in HR as well. So like you sit back and you're in those meetings that have those game plans and things like that. What thoughts run through your mind when
you
hear that?
I 100% agree with you. There's a great saying, and I'm not going to be able to say who said it, but it is diversity is being asked to the dance. Inclusion is being asked to dance. Those are two different things. Mm. And for me,
oh my God, I just got chills on that one. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah.
I at SoulCycle was really lucky to be able to push forward on some of our diversity and inclusion initiatives. And one of the biggest things for me is you can't focus on diversity by the numbers. It's just never going to work. You can try to invite everyone of different backgrounds, of different ethnic backgrounds, a black gay man to your team. Mm-hmm. But if you haven't focused on how you shift your culture to be inclusive and respectful to people of all different backgrounds, that person's going to come and leave within 6 months because they're like, what the fuck am I doing here?
Right.
Like, I'm not going to stay here.
Right.
So you know, saying diversity, I don't mean it in the numbers. There are certainly some companies that sadly do it so they can check it off of a list of things that they need to do. But for me, the inclusion piece is far more important. Asking people to dance, asking them to really be part and ingrained in your organization. That's where you get the collective benefit.
I love that.
Well, and let's be a little transparent about a few things. One is there's lots of government money when you can check off those boxes.
Of course.
So when you have a female on your board or when you have over a certain percentage of people of a certain minority or several minorities, there is incentive to do that.
There could be incentive. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Depending on the company, depending on the industry, and depending if they're accepting grant money, if they're a government contractor, those sorts of things.
Right. Well, yeah. Government contractor, entrepreneur, you know, a nonprofit, like a number of things.
Correct.
So that is a reality. But what we're talking about is your universal interview.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people probably want to know, and I don't mean to be litigious, and that is not my intent, but can you talk a little bit about what it looks like when someone's rights have been violated, either in an interview or being denied a job, versus what people think is protected and slighted, and what they actually have recourse for?
Yeah. It's a challenging question to answer because it's very situational. Going back to what I mentioned before, there's really no necessity to be asking questions around any of my personal characteristics while interviewing for a specific job. So if someone asks me what my age is or who I am married to, does your wife, you know, there's also those like picking questions where they're trying to figure it out, but they're not. You went on vacation. Did you and your wife enjoy yourself to get through of like, is it a wife? Is it a husband? Is it a partnership? How do I do that?
Right. Or those I sorts just of did questions, whatever with my kids. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
They just shouldn't come up. Mm-hmm. And I know that's a very general thing. And again, tied back to my experience, it just, I actually stray away from a lot of personal conversation mm-hmm. in an interview mm-hmm. and why I feel really strongly about the competencies and why you should have those. If it comes up in an interview, that stage of the process is probably the most difficult to be able to nail down that discrimination has happened in that point. It is, interviewing process and selection process is certainly something that the EEOC would, if there is a claim, that's an area of an avenue for recourse. If you believe you have been discriminated against as part of that process, it's just a really hard thing to prove.
And can you tell people EEOC, Equal Employment?
Equal Employment Opportunity Commission.
Right. Yeah. Just so people know.
Yeah. It's
educational for resources.
Of course. Yeah. Sorry.
No, it's fine. We all get into our acronyms. It happens.
There's lots of HR nerdy acronyms.
Tons.
Lots
Love
of
them.
I think every industry has one.
Yeah. But there's also other. So here in New York, too, the Commission for Human Rights is another that if you think that you have been discriminated against in that process, or even really at any stage during the employment cycle, I think what's easier to identify and to be able to act upon is after you have been hired into an organization. Then it becomes far easier to see yourself or other people that are similar to you being treated in a different way, being treated in a different way of access to learning and development opportunities, access to advancement, access to promotions and increases in the same way that someone who or a group of people that are different from you are being treated. But the interview process, going back, it's very unclear to be able to answer how someone would know it's happening and going about actually taking action on that front.
So I'm sorry, continue.
But I think you made some really good, helpful, applicable points, which is, if there's questions about your personal life, you probably shouldn't have to answer those. And there's a great way of addressing that, which is that doesn't speak to my experience that applies to this job or how you put it.
Yeah.
And I think it's also important to know that much like any other human resource, entitlement, advocacy group, there's no one-stop shop. There's lots of different entities that could assist you if you feel like you've been discriminated against.
Sure.
I want to just share briefly an experience I had where I know I was discriminated against, but I also know that that was not the intention. So I was 3 days on a job. And I knew that the person that was my boss was accepting, non-judgmental, wonderful, inclusive. I knew those things about her. But because I was in a room with two other people who were also new, and she pointed out the absence of a wedding ring, I felt discriminated against, and I felt pressured to be heteronormative. Mm-hmm. And it did create distance between us to the point where I trusted her with everything. I thought we saw eye to eye in every way, but I didn't tell her when I was getting married. And it was that exact moment that made me do that.
Yeah.
And again, not that I think she was trying to discriminate. When I left there, she was the one who spearheaded everyone coming to my party and has still advocated for me and has been wonderful. Like, she's an incredible person. That wasn't her intention. But that was my experience. And I think as an employee, it's important, as a gay employee, it's important to know that we can experience that. And as an employer, it's important to know that that was my experience, because you may not even think about that.
Yeah.
But that was my experience. And I did withhold things from her from then on because of it.
Yeah, that's the really challenging part of, there's discrimination and then there's harassment, which they're generally combined when you think about both discrimination and harassment. But there's just the area of harassment is so broad, and you commonly find, or I commonly find in my experience of when an employee that has an experience such as your experience shares that with me, I always feel compelled, there's a due diligence to investigate and actually share. To your point, that harasser doesn't even realize that they're doing that.
Right.
But it's also important that people that do have those experiences do share with someone, hopefully a trusted person, maybe in HR on the people team, so that we can teach people to not perpetuate that, mm-hmm. to teach people how together you can build that inclusive environment that make people feel comfortable to be their whole self. Because that just means you went along over a period of time not being your true authentic self.
Right.
Right.
That has to be hard for you. Mm-hmm. And the whole entire company misses out on who Tony is as a full authentic person. Mm-hmm. That's sad. But there are things to be learned. And even if the harasser, it sounds so harsh to say harasser for all of these things, because there's just like a wide array of all of these things. But in this case, that person harassed you, whether they intended to or not. But a lot of it is about intention and perception. But a lot of that, too, can be solved of a simple conversation of identifying the feeling that you felt, identifying what the actual intention was, and then bridging the gap of how not to have that happen again.
Mm-hmm. So that kind of brings me to my next question, which is, okay, we got past the interview. We got the job, being gay and amazing as we are.
Fabulous. Right?
For sure.
You're hired. Right.
So we got the job and we're working right now, and we're working with our fellow coworkers and peers and teammates or whatever your term is in the industry that you work at. And say that there is a person on the team that is harassing you for being queer, gay, lesbian, anything of the sort. What is the best way to deal with this? You know, because, you know, approaching it head on and dealing with the person head on is not always productive, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
And then going to HR can sometimes feel like snitches get stitches, right? Like, from an HR perspective, what would your advice be to like help make that situation better?
It's kind of like an escalation scale. So if you're not comfortable addressing it in the moment, then you move on. Are you okay talking to your manager? Maybe you have a really good relationship with your direct manager and you would feel comfortable sharing there. If not, then for sure your HR team is hopefully trusted enough, fingers crossed, that you could share your experience there. If not, a best practice in I guess it depends on the company and probably the stage in which they're at, will have some sort of anonymous reporting mechanism, mm-hmm. Which is an important, I would certainly, if maybe there are HR people listening today, in my mind, it's a must do. I've been at Pilotworks for 3 months. I have just, signed an agreement with an organization that is brand new. It's called All Voices, which not only allows for that anonymous reporting on harassment issues, but also just cultural things that are happening in the organization. But it allows an employee to either call or to report on a web-based platform. There's communication back and forth, but it's blocked. So it's all by text, but it has a special number you have to text into that you can actually continue a dialogue with your employees around what is happening, how you're investigating it, how you're addressing it, and what the end result is going to be, the resolution is going to be. So not all companies have that. I would certainly, I think it's becoming very common practice. Mm-hmm. But as part of the escalation, that is always, taking that anonymous approach, hopefully is a last resort, because there are people you trust in the organization. But if not, or it just is something that is something, even if you trusted someone, you're just still not comfortable talking about, that approach hopefully exists, or that option hopefully exists.
Good. I love it. And then one of the other questions I have to ask is based off of exit interviews. Mm-hmm. Are you a fan of exit interviews? I always find them to be like gripe sessions, right? It's like all the things
they can be.
So what are your thoughts about exit interviews?
I think interviews across the board, I think exit interviews by themselves only give you a glimpse into the employee experience. I think when combined with interviews at different stages of the employee experience, the employee journey, it tells a far better picture. So I am a fan of interviews at a number of stages. I'm a fan of surveying as part of the onboarding experience. So do I feel welcomed? Do I feel included? Do I know who people are that I'm working with? Mm-hmm. When I get to the 6-month window, then you start to introduce stay interviews, which I think are even more important than exit interviews of why am I going to stay here? Why do I feel engaged? Why do I feel like I have advancement opportunities here? That's a lot for a company to learn how to perpetuate positive in the experience. And to your point, the exit interview, depending on the reasons why someone is leaving, can be a great session. But it takes a little bit of... It's going to sound like I'm being boastful, but I'm not. It's going to take a little bit of HR experience to kind of dig through that and find the right questions to ask that don't allow for it to become a gripe section, but actually allow for productive mm-hmm. questions to be asked.
That was the word I was
going
to use, yeah.
Not positive or negative, because you don't want to influence the sentiment of the questions, but they're productive questions that you can go back and actually address as part of, again, the employee journey. Right,
things
employee
that have
experience.
Value, meaning, or actionable.
Yeah.
Love it. Awesome. So before we get out of here, Amy, we have listeners on here that, of course, are a part of the LGBTQIA community. And, you know, they are in their work environments, and some of them are uncomfortable and some of them are scared to interview, you know, for new jobs because, you know, they feel like they're not going to be able to be deemed worthy of their positions. What advice from an HR person would you give them to kind of give a little bit, I don't know, of a ray of sunshine to their situation to make them feel like they do have somebody that's listening?
I think with so much effort going into inclusion, I think the ray of sunshine, I would say, is just be yourself. It's sad to me to hear that anyone would be in that position to feel like they couldn't add value to an organization. Mm-hmm. It breaks my heart, but I understand what you're saying, and I understand why some people would be fearful in that way. But be yourself. That's all you can be. And I think organizations are at least the special ones. I guess, too, be selective in the organizations that you want to join.
Sure. Do your research.
Ask people. Yeah, do your research. Glassdoor these days is like... You know, from an employer perspective, it's also a nightmare.
It's a great burn book.
Yeah, because if anything goes wrong, someone's going to write something.
It's a fantastic
burn book. But it's also
book.
A great way for you to do your homework around culture. And does this organization actually value a diverse perspective and a broad group of people bringing communities together to create and build their teams? You're going to find there's so many sources of that information. So be selective because you can be selective, but also be yourself.
I think that's the best advice ever. Just a quick story.
For anything.
For any and everything. Just a quick story. You know, growing up as a Black man, my father... and as most any Black person that's listening to this as probably can attest to, you know, you are always told that you have to be like 3 times better than the average white person, right? Because skin color would always make it really, really challenging for you to get the job that you wanted, because that was the environment that we lived in, right? That's how the black community felt. By way, and it was a reality, right? Because, you know, people weren't getting jobs because of the color of their skin. And then as a Black gay man, I always felt even more, I don't know, challenges that came my way. Cause I'm like, my God, if they like get a glimpse of me, like if I talk to them for 1 second, like, are they going to want me because of my skin color and, or like, because of the fact that I'm a gay man? But to Amy's advice, I found that being myself was the best way to go about doing anything, because organizations that I never thought that I would be able to be a part of valued me and my resume and did not care about the fact that I have a husband or, you know, that I'm a Black man. They cared about the job that I was capable of doing. And I have been very blessed in my career. Again, I'm working the best job that I've ever worked in my entire life. And all of that had to do with the fact that the president of the company knew I was a Black gay man prior to even interviewing me. And he still valued my experience above all else, above anything else.
Yeah. I think there's an opportunity in finding allyship and mentorship as well to help guide the way. You find those people that, pardon the language, don't give two shits about like that part of your life. They care about you being a good person and being able to do the job.
Right. And can you pass the drug test?
And yeah, I mean, that might be an important part of that.
That one is that important. One too.
Yeah. As long as it's not not a wine test. But you find those people too that are going to help you along the way.
That's awesome.
So I have one last question and then a comment. The question is there any information that you feel that is important that we have not shared with our listeners in this discussion?
I'm not. I think it was a great discussion.
I think so, too. But yeah, did we miss anything?
I don't think missing anything. I would just say there's a lot of different avenues for recourse. And to your point, not wanting to encourage litigious action. Absolutely. But at a certain point, it's a necessity. And there's just a lot of agencies. There's a lot of resources. There's a lot of ways to find remedy and recourse there. Yeah.
I actually do have one more question. This is a topic that I'm like really, really into. I'm so sorry that I'm asking so many questions, but I do have one other question. How much does social media and a social media presence play into your ability to get a job? And are HR people allowed to hire you based off of your glitter underwear that you're wearing on a hoe box on Instagram? Like, is that something?
It's a very common question.
Yeah. No, yeah. But like, is that something that you have to worry about?
Glitter underwear on a hoe box.
Yeah, sure.
Or at the office.
Yeah.
I there's not a huge amount around social media right now from a legal standpoint.
Because it takes a long time to build those regulations.
Yeah, yeah. Of course. We move really, any governmental agency moves really slow. I think related, but not exactly the same, probably the most relevant legislation right now is the NLRB, the National Labor Relations Board, which works mostly with unionization. They have some standards around social media and the way in which you can use information that you find on social media, either against or not against an employee. But that's not at the point, again, going back to the interview stage of making a decision to hire someone. There's very little requirement there, especially around social media. So it depends on how finicky that potential company is. Depends on your public profile.
Right.
I mean, if you're putting it out there, I
might have to take
I think that's probably for everyone, right? I put up a lot of pictures of me drinking on the weekends, and someone could make a determination on my lifestyle from that too. There's very little that is put in stone as a protection on that front. Once you become an employee, going back to the NLRB, they have regulations that if you're talking about conditions of employment, there are restrictions on what an employer can do. So I didn't get the increase I wanted. I go home, I put a post up on social media. I can't believe I didn't get this increase. Or even going further in context of this conversation, I didn't get this increase because I am, I'm gay. I didn't get an increase, but the person over there who is in a heterosexual relationship, like, they got the increase.
Hashtag
why is
fuck
that?
My boss. Yeah, right. Correct. Right.
There's actually protections against that, within reason. There might hashtag fuck my boss might really do some damage there, but no hashtag. Hashtags aside,
that's a legal category all themselves.
You're talking about conditions of employment, and so the NLRB got on it because they say you can freely talk about conditions of employment because that's your right to unionize, to potentially unionize, is to talk about things about employment. So that's a roundabout answer to that question. But
well, that's some good
information. Social media is a, you know, our parents warning us all of these years of like, watch what you put out into the world is a real thing.
With consequences. And I think you make two really important points, one of which is there are different rights for potential employees versus existing employees. Mm-hmm. And that's a whole several chapter book of law.
Yeah.
And the other is that there are these growing rules and understandings and things that change and evolve. And we just sort of have to accept that because we have no other choice. So my final comment is, you know, as with anyone being able to write into this show and ask relationship questions, if you have questions related to these issues, you can also write in. Can't promise you access to Amy. Can't promise you that you'll get an answer directly about that, because as she pointed out, things are very situational. They're very circumstantial. They're based on your state. They're based on the policies of your agency. But we can give you advice on who your local advocacy groups are and the potential options you have that you should fully explore with someone who is more learned in that stuff in your area.
Yeah, well,
so I would encourage people to write, relationship questions
at gmail.com
about that, because it is an important issue, and I really appreciate you coming on here and talking about it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, we'll try to, if we get any of those questions, we'll try to come to you, Amy.
Please
to see
do.
If we,
please
she'll
do.
Be our consultant on those
I
questions. I love
I
it.
And you we'll were, pay her in wine.
Yes.
That's the best payment anyone can give me. Don't tell my current employer.
Right.
Red if it's a difficult question, yeah. White if it's an easy yeah. one.
There
perfect.
You go.
Perfect.
Amy, you were incredible.
Thank you.
So full of knowledge. I just love it. It's so incredible. Oh. Thank you so much. You're incredible, and we are so glad that you were here to join us.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. We're going to take a short break, and when we get back, we're actually going to listen to some of those listener situations. Hey there, listeners. Here's a little secret. My favorite part of the podcast is the hashtag Gay Relationship Goals segment. Honestly, I love having the ability to highlight queer couples and bringing healthy, loving, and oftentimes adorable relationships to the forefront, giving the LGBTQ community the opportunity to focus on this narrative. So, if you know of, are in, follow, or are a fan of a great relationship that you want to share with us, send us an email, relationshipquestions@gmail.com, or tag us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram @podrelationship. Let's get back to the show, but thank you for your help. We love you all.
And now it's time for our listener situations.
That's right. Send your relationship questions or comments to relationshipquestions@gmail.com. Tony and I will read your emails here on the show and do our best to give some guidance, because that's just the way you make me feel. That's just the way you make me feel. Uh-huh. So good, so good, so fucking real. Sorry, that's just my favorite part of the whole thing.
Oh, I thought there might be more. I was going to give you time.
I just liked that part.
All right, the first one. Hi, Critellis. My boyfriend and I are in our mid-30s and feel like we are ready for the next phase of our relationship.
I can't relate to that at all.
We've been together for 5 years and have lived together for 3 of those years. We want to get married, but because we are in our mid-30s, we don't know if we should get serious about having children. Neither one of us want to be old parents, but we also don't want to rush into having children and not spending enough time being a childless married couple.
I know you guys have talked about being married, flip-flopping on having children, and your plans for the future. What was your decision? How do you feel about your decision? And if you are going to have children, when will you make time for that? Any guidance you guys have may have will be much appreciated. We don't have friends that are going through the same things we are. They're either heterosexual or gay and single. So you guys are the only people we know to seek advice from. Thanks for the help, Tyler and Michael. Well, Tyler and Michael, we have flip-flopped quite a bit. I think where we're at right now is we've decided that we're going to spend a little bit more time being married and traveling, and we're going to reconvene in, did we say 2 years?
2 years, yeah.
Yeah. And so the thing that I would say is, I mean, as you know, you pointed out, we've talked about this, like Marco and I were like dead set on having children. Like it was a deal breaker by like date three. We were talking about it because it was so important to us. And then we've been flip-flopping on it. I personally think that you need to make time to travel or just be married or do whatever it is that you want to do. You don't have to rush into having children. The idea of having children in like your early 20s, late 20s, even early 30s, like that's very couple generations ago because you didn't live that long. So 40 is not old at all, and 40 is not too old to be having children. Now, I don't think you should wait till you're 40, but I'm just saying, like, don't worry about being in your mid or early 30s and thinking that your non-existent biological clock is ticking. You will be vibrant and you will be able to keep up with your child. And I wouldn't worry too much about that. When it's right, you'll know it's right. When it's time, you'll know it's time. You can talk about what that might look like. You can talk about what you want to see happen before that. And even in having that conversation, you all may find that you don't want to wait. And that would be okay too. So I would start there with the conversation of, okay, it is however long it's been and we're ready to have children. And the reason we're ready to have children is because these things happened, fill in the blank, and see where that takes you.
I do think that 40 is really not, I don't think 40 is old, but I could see somebody not wanting to be in their 40s and start having children because I think that is kind of late in life to do it. So I understand that. I kind of put myself in a position at this point where if Tony and I don't start making moves towards doing it in the next few years, then I just don't think it's in the cards for us because I don't know that I'm particularly interested in being older and starting that way. It's completely different than like having your second or third child by that time period. Like having your first by that time period, it for me, it feels like, and I don't know if that's how you feel or where you're at or anything of the sort. I'm not trying to project. I'm just trying to tell you how I feel about, like, feel about it for me. I think that you do have the ability to figure it out, and you can. You just need to have a conversation with your partner about it. You know, mid-30s, you do have a lot of career, a lot of life, a lot of great, joyous times together that you guys can capitalize on. So there's nothing wrong with doing that. But I really think that you should not pressure yourself to do anything that you are not ready to do or prepared to do. I think it was Eddie and Tony that said, you know, if we don't know what to do, we just do nothing. So, and I think that was wonderful advice. That gives you the ability to like take the pressure off of making rash decisions or things that you're just not completely prepared for. I think that is something that is super helpful. So take your time, figure it out, and then go from there.
Okay. Our second one says, hi guys, my name is Wynn and I'm a 28-year-old single Asian gay male living in San Francisco. I really love your podcast and listen every week during my commute to work on Wednesdays. You guys are hilarious. Oh, thank you. I know I am. But I really like how
Except
honest...
that wasn't funny.
I was laughing. I really like how honest you are, and I think you might be able to help me out with my current predicament. About a month ago, I met a great guy named James. He's wonderful and funny and successful, and he makes me laugh. He's 36 and really wants children, but I don't. He's certain of his decision, but so am I. I really like him in a way that I haven't had before with any other guy. Is it wrong to want to see where this goes? I told him I'm open to the idea, but I'm really not. I know that it is wrong, but I don't want what we have to end. What should I do?
This is a very children-full episode.
Yeah, right from the beginning. Babies everywhere. Mm-hmm. When I was with you up until the point that you told him something that wasn't true. You sound so certain, I believe you owe it to him and to you to continue to be that honest. Now, having said that, if he makes you feel uncertain, then that's a different story. But I would go down that road, but it doesn't sound like that's actually what's going on. It sounds like you're pretty sure and you know that you're essentially misleading him. I mean, you're asking for advice, so I'm going to give you direct, honest
guidance,
because that's, you know, I believe in telling the truth. If you're misleading this person, then that is not right. You're asking, is it okay? It's not. You should, you know, you want to see where this goes, and that's great. But that means that you should tell him, you know, I know I don't want children, but I also know that I want to see where this goes. Is there anything that we can do? That would be the right thing to do. To tell him that you are open to the idea of children when you're not, that's a real problem. You cannot build a relationship on a foundation like that.
Well, I kind of disagree, because I feel like, even like you and I got into the relationship under one thing, and then our ideals kind of changed a little bit behind it. I feel like that can happen. I feel like you should be honest with him. I don't disagree with that. I think you should be honest with him and let him know that that's kind of how you feel and that's what you're trying to feel out. But my problem is you don't want to waste his time, because he will feel as if it was a waste of his time, where, you know, saying that, you know, I could potentially be with you and, you know, I don't know whether or not I'm going to want them at a later date or anything like that, but I'm willing to figure it out and see that. Like, that's a problem, because that could be a huge waste of his time, because 5-6 years down the line, when he wants to start getting serious and start thinking about like final stages of life and like what he wants to do and where he wants his life to go, if you still are not worth, like, you still don't want to have children, you've wasted his time. He could have been spending that time with somebody that wants to build that family with him. So I understand that you may have said that because maybe, and I'm being super optimistic here, but maybe you do in your heart of hearts feel like he could change your mind. Maybe. But if you know for a fact, much to Tony's point, that you are just like, that's a hard no, and you actually have zero intention of ever having children because you just don't want them, then you shouldn't waste his time. You shouldn't waste your time, and you should be completely honest with him about it and let him know that and say, like, I had intentions of potentially having my mind changed, but I'm not 100% certain that that is actually going to happen. So if we do continue dating one another, you have to know that the possibility of me wanting to have children could not change. There's a huge possibility that I'm going to feel the exact same way that I do right now. So if you want to continue dating, just know that. But if you want to break up with me, I understand, because I don't want to waste your time, and I want you to make sure you have everything that you want, because you deserve that. And just let him know that, and just be that blunt. That conversation is a hard conversation, but it's not, I mean, he's in his mid-30s. It's not worth doing that to him for. It's not, because you're being selfish at this point. He's a good guy, but there's other good guys that are out there that want the same things that you want, and you won't have to lie to them or lead them on or make them think that there's a possibility of you changing your mind on something that's pretty intense of a situation. Having children is not like buying a new car. Like, this is a huge scenario. So you definitely want to make sure you let them know. Right away. Let him know right away, and give him the ability to find somebody that he wants that feels the same way that he does, so that you guys are not, you know, playing a game that has no exact end.
All right. There you have it. So we're going to take a quick break, and we got a cute little sign off for y'all. So that's going to do it for this week's episode.
Thanks for tuning in and being a part of this really important conversation.
Remember to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Pod Relationship. And don't forget to subscribe and rate us. And tell someone you know.
You can also email us at relationshipquestions@gmail.com if you have any questions or comments that you'd like us to address here on the show.
If you're in the New York City area, please don't forget to join our group on meetup.com for more relationship content and activities.
We will harass your ears next week.
And remember, nobody wants to be the star of their own shit show.